Welcome to the daily VFN Radio Highlights, where we're keeping the conversation light at VFNTV.com. Enjoy.
In the original intent of the nation, we like to and often share about the Constitution. We have started a series by Judge Napolitano. He does a great job in talking about the Constitution and freedom. And we have a third part in this six-part series available for you. It's so important that we understand the original intent. Because if we don't understand the original intent, we won't even honor the fact that we have a Constitution and really delve into what the Constitution does for us as a people.
Mm-hmm.
These are informative and really inspiring. We want you to listen up because we're going to talk about part three of the Constitution and Freedom, the original intent and purpose of the Constitution.
The Congress of the United States of America, its job is to write the federal laws. There are two houses of Congress, the Senate and the House of Representatives. If they can agree on the wording of the laws, it goes to the president for him to sign into law or to veto. The job of the Congress is to look at the Constitution, follow the Constitution, and write the laws of the land. After we won our independence from England, the colonies set about forming a central government. We never had a central government here. Rather, we had 13 governments, one for each of the colonies. The Continental Congress that had met at Princeton, New Jersey, and hired George Washington and gave him money to spend on an army, did not have real authority, and it was quickly disbanded when the British went back to England. The first government we had here was defined in the Articles of Confederation. This set up a small Congress and a one-year term rotating presidency, but there was no real central government. The real power still remained in the state governments. The states imposed crippling tariffs on goods from out of state, and a movement soon began for a new central government. After the states sent delegates to Philadelphia to draft a constitution, and after all 13 states adopted it in constitutional conventions held in each state, the new government began to operate, first in New York City, then in Philadelphia, then permanently in Washington, D.C. The framers took great pains to create a unique and limited federal government, unique in that its powers were precisely defined and separated among three branches, and federal in that it would not interfere with the states except to stop those tariffs. The Congress was created with two bodies of representatives. The House of Representatives was elected directly by the voters, and it was intended to be their voice in the federal government. Each state has an assigned number of representatives proportioned to the state's population. The Senate was elected by the legislatures of each of the 13 states, and it was to be the states' voices in the federal government. Each state had, and still has, two senators, though the senators today are popularly elected. Even though the Constitution begins with the words, "We the people," in reality it was "we the states" that created the federal government. Not wanting to give up too much of their power, the framers were careful to set forth the powers that the new government would have. These powers were all given to the Congress, since it is the Congress's job to write the laws. The president's job is to enforce the laws, and the courts were established to interpret them. But the real power in the federal government, the power to regulate human behavior, the power to write the laws, was given by the Constitution to the Congress. The Constitution gives Congress only 17 specific powers, areas in which it can write laws, like keep interstate commerce regular, establish post offices, raise an army and a navy, support the arts, establish a court system, mint and coin money, establish uniform standards for weights and measures, and collect excise taxes. The Congress was also told to stay out of the way of the states. Income taxes were forbidden. Congress was part-time and had no offices or staff. The 9th and 10th Amendments to the Constitution, which were soon added as a part of the Bill of Rights, made clear that Congress was only given the powers enumerated in the Constitution, and all remaining powers stayed with the states and the people. But it would not stay that way for long. The same folks who wrote in the First Amendment that Congress shall make no law abridging the freedom of speech quickly made it a crime for anyone to criticize the president and members of Congress. Soon, Congress established a central bank, a precursor to the Federal Reserve System, even though there was no authority in the Constitution to do that either. Generations later, Congress would legalize slavery, tax homemade whiskey, regulate the amount of wheat a farmer could grow in his own backyard for his family's own use, regulate the ages of persons who could work in factories, the prices merchants could charge for goods, the strength of water pressure in home showers, the amount of lobsters one can fish from the sea. And Congress would even outlaw the movement of certain goods it didn't care for in interstate commerce, even though its whole purpose was to assure that interstate commerce was kept regular. The philosopher Lord Acton once wrote that power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely. He was right. Congress does not draw to its halls those who love liberty. It draws those who love power. We suffer from that today. After over 200 years of stretching the plain meaning of the words in the Constitution, we now have a Congress that thinks it can write any law, regulate any human activity, and tax any event, no matter what the Constitution says. But the Constitution was not written in order to enable Congress to right every wrong. It was written to define the federal government, to limit its behavior to the 17 specific delegated powers contained in the document, and to leave the remaining power in government to the states. Today, the states have lost virtually all their independence to the Congress, which has simply and regularly commanded them to do the things it wants done, or offers them money, like a bribe, to bend them to its will. Will we ever have a Congress that respects the states, protects our liberties, and stays within the confines of the Constitution? Congress writes the laws of the land, and as long as it stays within the 17 powers given to it by the Constitution, our freedoms will be preserved. But it's the job of the President and the Supreme Court to make sure that the laws that Congress writes comply with the Constitution.
Wow. We're learning so much here, and it's so important that we really understand the framework of the Constitution. Mm-hmm. What he was talking about, in particular, about the Constitution and how Congress works. And I thought it was pretty interesting in the fact that the Congress, you know, they have to maintain the law. They have to write the law as long as the law is in line with the Constitution.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But if it's not enforced, then things can actually get by and get through.
Mm-hmm.
In the House of Representatives, they're elected basically by population.
Mm-hmm.
But the Senate represents, you have two senators for each state.
Mm-hmm.
It was interesting that how when they were first putting the country together and formalizing a federal government, that the president only was served annually.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, wow, who knew?
Yeah, right.
Who knew? But what they were doing was trying to give a little bit of the state's power over to form a federal government, but they were wanting to restrict them only to certain powers that were within the Constitution, leaving the remaining powers
to the states.
Mm-hmm. And when you get federal government involved in so many aspects of citizens' lives, it really begins to minimize the importance and the power of the states and what's happening at the local level.
Mm-hmm.
And this is so good. This is so good. The federal, the government, remember, we have a constitution by and for the people. And it looks like in today's society, and what's happening is that there's career politicians and there's people that want to just stay in Congress and they want to stay there forever. But when are we going to get back to those that want to serve for a certain amount of time and come back and feel a certain responsibility to the local people?
Right.
We are sending elected representatives to represent us, and they need to do according to what the people, you know, as we're leading and as we're voting and what the concerns are, not to go and push their own agenda and not read bills that they're getting ready to sign into law. You got to read the bills.
Mm-hmm.
You got to read the bills. But it's interesting how every branch, whether it's the executive branch, which is the president, the the judicial branch and Congress, how they all take an oath. They all take an oath to protect and serve the Constitution. This is the oath. This is the oath of the office of the United States. And it says this for the president: I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will faithfully execute the office of the president of the United States and will, to the best of my ability, preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution of the United States. So help me God. Mm-hmm. That's the president.
Yeah.
The Senate is sworn in. You're sworn in. You just don't walk up into your office. You're sworn in, and you're taking this pledge before your colleagues.
Mm-hmm.
You're taking this pledge before your fellow citizens who voted you in. You're taking this pledge before the rest of the country.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, before God, because he sees everything. Right. And this is what the Senate says: I do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign and domestic, and that I will bear true faith and allegiance to the same, that I take this obligation freely and without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will and faithfully discharge the duties of my office which I am about to enter. So help me God. This is so important.
Mm-hmm.
This is so important because people are being held accountable. They're being held accountable. This is the oath for the House of Representatives. I, put their member's name, do solemnly swear or affirm that I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States against all enemies, foreign, those outside of this country, and domestic, those who actually live in this country, who want to come against our Constitution. They're supposed to defend it.
That's right.
Even though they could be a U.S. citizen. That I will bear the true faith and allegiance to do the same, that I take this obligation freely without any mental reservation or purpose of evasion, and that I will and faithfully discharge the duties of the office in which I'm about to enter. So help me who?
God.
This is the oath that the Supreme Court justices take, who are appointed for life. And it says, I and their name do solemnly swear to affirm that I would administer justice without respect to persons and do equal right to the poor and to the rich, and that I will faithfully and impartially discharge and perform all the duties incumbent upon me as their name, according to the best of my abilities and understanding and agreeably to the Constitution and the laws of the United States. So help me
God.
Listen, God and country. In that order, God first. We need God in America, and we need a strong country that remembers the Constitution and the reason why this country was even formed, and it protects those rights that have been given by God. It's appropriate that they ask, so help me God, since God is the one that actually gave us these natural rights. I want to encourage you, be a responsible citizen. Be a responsible Christian. Why is the Constitution so important for Christians? Because listen, it also protects us to have the freedom of speech,
mm-hmm.
the freedom to gather, the freedom to share the gospel. And it's so important because others would try to make it hate speech, but it's not hate speech, it's love speech. Get informed and know the truth.
It is amazing how this is all working. It's people just like you, friends like you, that stand with us and understand, you know, we've got to make a difference in our generation, that stand with us prayerfully and financially, to just partner on a monthly basis, to financially build a foundation that where we can carry this message not only to the nation of America, but to the nations of the world. It's amazing how so many people are being encouraged by a simple gift of a few dollars a month, $25 a month, $50 a month, whatever it is. And you know what? Together, if you're having difficulty in how to present the gospel to this generation, partner with us, and we together at VFN TV and the Daily Radio Program will bring the gospel to this nation. And this nation, by God's grace, to the Lord. Go to VFNTV.com and click on giving. VFNTV.com and click on giving. You've just been listening to the highlights from the daily VFN radio program, where we're keeping the conversation light. Don't forget to share it with your friends. Find out more and listen to the daily VFN radio program in its entirety at VFNTV.com or with your mobile VFN TV app on your mobile phone or device. That's VFNTV.com.